RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
I'm reading from the WHO website, 1st of June 2024. The headline, 77th World Health Assembly Daily Update. World Health Assembly Agreement reached on wide-ranging decisive package of amendments to improve the international health regulations, improve, and sets date for finalising negotiations on a proposed pandemic agreement. They go on to say, in an historic development, the World Health Assembly, the annual meeting of the World Health Organization's 194 member countries, today agreed on a package of critical amendments to the International Health Regulations 2005, IHR, and made concrete commitments to completing negotiations on a global pandemic agreement within a year at the latest. These critical actions, they tell us, have been taken in order to ensure comprehensive, robust systems are in place in all countries to protect the health and safety of all people everywhere from the risk of future outbreaks and pandemics. These decisions represent two important steps by countries taken in tandem with one another on the final day of the 77th World Health Assembly to build on lessons learned from several global health emergencies, including the COVID-19 pandemic. The package of amendments to the regulations will strengthen, they say, global preparedness, surveillance, and responses to public health emergencies, including pandemics. So that's what they're telling us.
I just think that's hugely concerning because in one person's opinion, there could be a potential threat that is real or fake. And then they decide to implement all these restrictions and limitations on humans, on society, breaching fundamental human rights. And then what happens after that? How long does it last for? How long do we have to submit to whatever's going on?
Helen?
So also, this is not new in history. If you look at the Syracuse principles, which were penned, Sue might know when they were penned, I think it was like in the late 70s or something. And they were penned because that was an era when leaders were misusing their power by claiming emergencies in order to control their populations. And so the principles were written in order to stop that from ever happening again. And we're only like 50 years later and it's happening again. Mm. And they're using nature. So viruses exist in nature. Viruses are everywhere. There's viruses on my chair right now, up my nose, you know, on my skin. They're all around us all the time. And if you look for them, you are going to find them. And what they're doing is claiming that that's a threat. But that has 8% of our human genome is viral in origin. Viruses are part of us. And yes, they do sometimes make us sick. And there are ways to respond to that when that happens. But claiming a pandemic threat constantly is, that's not about health. That's about power and money.
Yeah, right. It's particularly worrying with all the surveillance that they're doing too and the PCR testing, because they can find whatever they look for, whether it's there or not, because the testing is so unreliable and so magnified. And we had quite a discussion about that with the international lawyers. We had a big prep meeting as well as the actual press conference. And people are extremely concerned about all of that. You know, they've just given themselves basically an open-ended ticket to create a pandemic for spurious reasons whenever they feel like doing that.
We talked about communicating this effectively. And I can tell you right now, as we're talking, there's nothing in our local media about this whatsoever. Nothing. Not a skerrick of anything. So no one knows. And it's too much to try and tell someone in one go. What do we do?
Yeah, step by step. You know, it was interesting in Switzerland yesterday in Geneva on the street, because apparently they'd never had a street march like it before. And nobody really knew how they were going to respond. And the police level of attention was quite significant. Like, it was quite scary. They had these massive minivans full of police with like every armory you could ever imagine, and the van itself also armored. But actually the police turned out to be fine, and it was all pretty friendly, or for, at least from what I saw. But what was amazing was the response of the citizens. So people all the way up and down the street were live streaming what we were doing, because it was quite a novelty for them. They hadn't seen it. But the signage was really good, that the people had, it was fun, because we had the Swiss cowbells, we had the German little band playing, we had the Portuguese singing, we had all kinds of music, and people really in a sort of almost a celebrating people taking our power mood. And we were getting amazing feedback from the crowd, people saying, gosh, we had no idea. This is really concerning. We're going to now have a look at it. And we even had people saying, hey, I work for the World Health Organization. I totally agree with you that what the World Health Organization leadership is doing is not at all what we signed up to do. So, you know, getting out on the street and raising awareness is definitely hugely powerful. And I think we have to do more of that in New Zealand, but we have to do it in an engaging way, not in a scary, angry way, so that people feel that they can come and talk to us about it.
Easier said than done, perhaps. I want to play a clip.
We're agreed and adopted by consensus. And then we heard a small number of countries making statements that really were stating their position in that they were going to take the time to review the amendments and then determine what their position was on them. This is built into the international health regulations. But I think it's also worth pointing out, we then had a great number of interventions from member states expressing their strong support for this updated package of IHR. The key thing here is, of course, we want, and this is the strength of the IHR, that they are universal, and it would be important for their ongoing relevance and, of course, their ongoing effectiveness that as many member states as possible sign up to them. The key point here is they are an opt-in legal instrument, and all member states are part of the new amendments and are signed up to them unless they express reservations. Based on the work we did this week, I'm very confident that the great number of states parties will follow up and remain committed.
So Ashley's confident. The work they've done. What could that work be? Strong-arming people.
His consensus has got the same sort of tone as Chris Hipkins's no vaccines were mandatory, hasn't it?
Yeah.
It's pretty concerning. I mean, the thing is, we can opt out. We have to put enormous pressure on our government to opt out, because we cannot be part of this. We just cannot let ourselves be controlled by international globalist forces that have no care at all about the citizens of New Zealand. Well, hopefully you can get them on the show and they can explain what their position is. And it'd be great if you could get Ashley. It'd be great if you could get Ashley on as well.
Well, he's from the same suburb as me.
Oh, wow.
Which is very heartbreaking for me, because I don't want riffraff living in my old suburb. I said that. No one else said that. I think I'm allowed to vent a little. But maybe he'll give it a go. He did kind of, I thought, accuse us of being one of the mis and disinformation spreaders that he referred to last week. Well-organized, well-funded in his dreams, not like him.
I would like to see what I think would be really, really useful is to show the average donation to, say, NZSOS and Reality Check Radio, and then compare that to the daily income that Ashley Bloomfield receives from the New Zealand taxpayer, and then we can go head-to-head on who's being funded better.
Mm. Okay.
Mm. Plus any other funding that he gets from other sources for his work with these regulations, because, I mean, we know that the World Health Organization gets massive funding from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and from other private interests. And this is one of the real problems that we talked about at the meeting yesterday, that it is public-private funding, which somebody described as fascism, right? It is the private calling the shots.
Yeah.
And yet there's no transparency for any of this. Like, where is all that money going? Whose
and
pockets?
When he called us, whatever it was he called us, anti-science, anti-conspiracy theorists or whatever, was he had a big UN Foundation banner behind him. And if you go to the UN Foundation page, they're partnered with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and a whole lot of other very wealthy organisations. So there's sponsorship going on there constantly.
All right. Any final words before we end our little chat here. You folk in Geneva, me in Wellington.
Yeah.
Right now.
Well, first of all, I think Reality Check Radio is doing such a great job in the absence of any publicly funded media in New Zealand that is prepared to deal with the public interest issues, which is absolutely outrageous in itself. It's just such a relief that you are asking these questions.
Do you think they've been told not to talk about it? Because it's hard to explain on its newsworthiness, because I know what's newsworthy because I've worked in it for so long. That is a big news story, yet nothing. So how do we explain that? It's more than just, you know, we want click-throughs on women with endless cancer, turbo cancer, which seems to be coming up all the time. You know, it's newsworthy and it's not being reported. There has to be an explanation for that, doesn't there, somewhere?
Maybe they could connect the woman with turbo cancer with the World Health Organization and make it a proper public interest story. That linking, I mean, this is the whole problem, isn't it? They do little snips of what suit them, but they don't ask the big questions that show how all these things connect together.
They don't want the answer, Sue. Through. They know the answer and they don't want to.
And they're scared of the answers, exactly. Yeah. And the answers are just sitting there in red flags, so obvious. I mean, you've almost got to have a blindfold on and earmuffs on to not see the answers. This is what really concerns me. You know, and all this stuff, what they do, they call us names, they throw all this abuse at us, but they're actually describing the very things that they're doing themselves, and they're reflecting it on to us as if we're doing the things that they're actually doing. I mean, it's just such a mad world at the moment.
Hence, fake.
Famous phrase from a Nazi. I don't know if it was Goebbels or one of the others who said.
Goebbels, you mean?
that which you're doing.
I think also if you take the media in general and the editors and producers of various shows, their primary ethical consideration when creating stories is to make money. So when they get a story in, they decide, and it's only one person who makes that final call. Is this story going to make my organisation money? Is this going to be able to pay the people who are under me? And perhaps they don't think that the World Health Organization story, it sounds too conspiratorial, and perhaps that's not going to make enough money for them as an organisation, considering the Public Interest Journalism Fund is about to start to dry up.
Well, there are government owned and funded organisations, RNZ. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at the RNZ website, not a mention. Don't see
it anywhere. And I mean, they label it as a conspiracy, but it's all there in black and white. If anybody goes on the World Health Organization website, this is where we're getting a lot of this information from. Like, it's again because they've done such a brainwashing on the New Zealand community that people think that this is just so bizarre it can't possibly be true. But, you know, we've got the same with so many issues in New Zealand where they're doing absolutely insanely, crazily bad things. But they're so bad that the average member of the public cannot believe that a good government would possibly do that.
Yeah.
We somehow have to break through from that.
The World Health Organization page is quite difficult to navigate. And when you get to the page that you're looking for, it's really quite difficult for a layperson to interpret what they're reading. So we rely on people like Sue to interpret it for us who have legal backgrounds as well.
Well, the big story today, just so you know, is Jack Tame was nasty to Nicola Willis on Q&A. That's the big story.
Not the fact that we could be losing human sovereignty across the planet.
No.
And be locked down on a whim whenever they want us to be.
No, it's nasty Jack, young Jack, in his attitude. Who cares about the budget when this is going on? It's nothing compared to this.
No.
All right. Any final words? And we'll be doing more come Tuesday, Wednesday. So, but you're there on the spot. Any final words? Who wants to go first? Sue?
No, look, just to say it's really empowering when you're standing together from experts around the world, especially from different expertise. You know, we've got research scientists, we've got doctors, we've got lawyers, we've got communications people. And these people have done so much work researching, and it's just such a valuable resource. And we've got we've got these connections now, which is super important for us in New Zealand, because we can feel a bit isolated at times. But now everyone is just an email or a WhatsApp message away. We're sharing information with some of the greatest brains in the world. So we're in a great position. We just have to make sure that we can somehow get this information out to the public of New Zealand, because they'll be horrified when they find out what our government has signed up to on our behalf.
Yeah. Anna and Helen?
So I guess for me, I'd like to say that there is hope, because even though it's ongoing, the treaty, the so-called treaty, is on hold at the moment.
For a year.
Yeah, well, within a year, I think it is, isn't it?
Yeah, that goes quick. It's just, remember, but yeah. Yep, fair enough.
The amendments to the international health regulations, although they did sign them off, they're apparently extremely watered down. And I feel that that is at least in part because of the opposition that they have faced by people, okay, by the group we belong to.
Thanks, Helen and Anna.
I just really feel quite strongly that this all can end when we stand up and say no. I want to move the narrative, particularly away from fear, into empowerment, so that does it take courage to get out there and speak to people face to face, to stand on a stage or to put anything out on social media. It takes courage, and we're going to have those courageous conversations. But this will end when we say no, because we are the majority. There's more of us than there are of them, and they need to listen. If they're taking away our democracy, there's a huge concern there, and we have a right to be able to speak out against that. So that's not misinformation. That's just taking a little bit of courage each and every day, asking people questions in the street, unaggressive. It doesn't need to be a big deal. It just could plant a seed so that somebody starts to question what's going on.
And be comfortable with discomfort, because it is uncomfortable, and that's okay.
Kiwis don't do discomfort very well, I've come to realize.
Yeah.
Well, it's better to have a little bit of
grandmother before they want to feel uncomfortable, kind of.
It's better to have a little bit of discomfort in a few conversations than to let these globalists take control of our future. I mean, a little bit of pain now is a good investment. And, you know, we're going to need all the courage we can get. The more practice we have now, the better. And, you know, we've done a great job raising awareness already. I'm pretty sure that they thought that it was going to be a done deal before they got to where they got to. We made it a lot harder for them because people did step up. We just have to ramp it up even more. We just have to expand our networks even more.
I want to thank Sue Gray Lawyer, Anna McLaughlin, NZDSOS, and Helen Tindall, NZDSOS, for beaming in all the way from Geneva for this special update chat. Thank you, folks, for being on the spot for us. And I'm sure we'll probably talk again in the next week or so as we sort of kind of grind through this. So thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much, Paul.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.